Right now, millions of people are just, terrified that artificial intelligence is going to take their job.
Oh, absolutely. That is the dominant headline everywhere you look.
Right. But almost no one is talking about a much more immediate, kind of insidious threat. The idea that AI is going to take over their relationships, commodify their deepest thoughts, and like fundamentally alter the actual biology of human reasoning.
Yeah, we aren't really just asking what AI can do anymore. That's old news.
Exactly. The much more urgent question for this deep dive is, what is AI doing to us?
And it really is the defining question of our time, you know?
Yeah.
Because the shift we are living through right now, it isn't just a basic technological upgrade. It's deeply personal. And it is happening way faster than our societal frameworks can even process.
Which is exactly why we are pulling from a really comprehensive resource today to get a sort of 360-degree view of all this. We are diving into Nexus, Exploring the Frontiers of Intelligence, Issue 22, and that's curated by David Espindola.
Right, and it's a fantastic compilation.
It really is. This issue pulls together cutting-edge insights from Nature, Science Magazine, The Guardian, researchers at Harvard, and Psychology Today.
So our mission for this deep dive is to basically synthesize all those diverse perspectives. We need to understand this massive transition we're in.
Yeah.
AI is rapidly moving from being this narrow, specific tool into an autonomous system that's capable of complex reasoning.
Right. It's doing the thinking for us.
Exactly. And we have to investigate how this new dynamic threatens to turn our cognition into a cheap commodity, how it could monetize our emotional vulnerabilities, and even challenge our biological understanding of what intelligence actually is.
Okay, so let's unpack this, because right at the center of all this is a really glaring paradox. We are spending billions of dollars and, countless hours building machines that can think, but in doing so, are we actively risking our own ability to do the exact same thing?
That tension right there is the thread connecting all of these sources. To really grasp how AI is changing us, we first have to correct a massive, almost universally held misconception about what AI is actually becoming.
Oh, you mean the classic sci-fi movie version of the future? The
Yes.
giant glowing red eye in the server room?
Exactly, the HAL 9000 trope. Well, the Science Magazine article featured in Nexus completely dismantles that idea.
Thank goodness.
Right, we've all heard of the singularity. It's this popular idea that one day a single, cold, godlike silicon brain will wake up, bootstrap itself to superintelligence, and just consolidate all cognition into one isolated point.
Right.
But the science piece argues that this assumption ignores literally everything we know about how intelligence actually evolves.
Well, yeah, because intelligence doesn't just, spawn in a vacuum.
Far from it. If you look at the trajectory of AI development through the lens of, say, previous major evolutionary transitions, like when single-celled organisms became multicellular, this next intelligence explosion isn't going to be a singular, isolated event.
It's going to be messy.
It is going to be incredibly plural. The authors point out that intelligence is inherently high-dimensional and relational. To grow, it actually requires an ecosystem.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it will be highly social, distributed across countless systems, and deeply entangled with its human forebears.
Which honestly makes perfect sense when you consider human biology. I mean, neuroscience is actively proving this exact point about our own brains.
Yes, the Nature Communications Study.
Right. The Nexus issue includes this fascinating study published in Nature Communications, and it was reported by The Debrief. It completely reframes how we view human cognition.
It really does.
Because for the longest time, traditional science was searching for a single command center in the brain. They thought problem-solving lived in one specific lobe, like finding the single microchip that runs the whole machine.
But the neuroimaging data completely upends that model. The researchers found that human intelligence doesn't reside in one localized region at all.
It's everywhere.
Exactly. It emerges from the entire network working in concert. In fact, they found that the structural and functional connections across the whole brain are vastly better predictors of a person's cognitive ability than the size or strength of any one individual region.
That's incredible.
It is. The study emphasizes a mechanism they call a small world architecture.
Okay, wait, help me visualize that mechanism. How does a small world architecture actually function inside the skull?
So a small world network means that even though the brain has billions of neurons, any two neurons are incredibly close to each other via a few connecting hubs.
Okay.
Think of it like a map of global flight paths. You have these intense, tightly knit local clusters doing specific, detailed work like a regional airport.
Right.
but they're connected by massive long-distance neural highways that share that data globally and almost instantly.
Okay, so the old view of intelligence was like a CEO sitting in a corner office just barking orders. But the reality for both our brains and for future AI is more like a bustling city's traffic grid, where the magic is really in the coordination and the connections.
That is the perfect way to understand it. The system's power comes from its global coordination. That allows for incredibly efficient, flexible information processing.
Makes sense.
And understanding our own brain's reliance on this networked coordination is currently inspiring the next wave of artificial intelligence. Future AI systems are being built as adaptable, brain-inspired networks, not just isolated calculators.
Okay, but if intelligence, both human and artificial, is a networked property, things get really complicated when we start plugging our human brains into the artificial network to do our thinking for us.
Oh, they get very complicated. We run right into the concept of intelligence as a utility.
Right.
John Nosta explores this heavily in his Psychology Today piece. He raises the prospect that human intelligence is basically being transformed from a personally cultivated skill into a purchasable commodity.
A commodity.
Yes. Becomes available on demand, just like electricity. You flip a switch, and the deep thinking is generated for you.
Wait, let me push back on this for a second. Because we've seen technological outsourcing before.
Right.
If we look at recent history, we've already experienced a micro version of this with GPS. We outsourced our spatial navigation to our phones, and within a decade, studies showed our hippocampi were literally changing because we lost the friction of having to build mental maps.
Yeah, the physical brain changed.
Right. Are we talking about the same mechanism here, just applied to all of human reasoning? Like, shouldn't technology make life easier?
It is the exact same mechanism, but with much, much higher stakes. When you treat thought as a utility, you systematically remove the mental friction required to process complex information.
The struggle of learning.
Exactly. Nosta warns that removing this struggle fundamentally shifts our personal agency. We transition from being creators of thought to mere consumers of thought.
Wow.
And if we lose the habit of reflection, of wrestling with nuance and contradiction, we weaken our capacity for independent judgment. We lose a defining characteristic of the human experience.
And we are already seeing the fallout of that lost friction in real time. The Guardian report in our Nexus compilation paints a very messy picture of how this commodification is playing out in day-to-day life.
It's definitely not the smooth utopian transition Silicon Valley promised us.
Not at all. The Guardian points out that educators are actively battling to maintain critical thinking in the classroom because students are using bots to write their assignments. They are completely bypassing the cognitive struggle of learning.
The friction hasn't disappeared. It has just moved from our internal cognition to our external systems.
Exactly. And in the corporate world, the implementation of these tools is causing absolute chaos. Employees are finding that mandated AI tools, which were supposed to make everything faster, are actually hindering their productivity.
Which happens because the human worker now has to spend immense amounts of time verifying the AI's output.
Right, fixing the mistakes.
When you remove the human from the drafting process, the AI lacks crucial context. So the employee is stuck fact-checking hallucinations rather than doing meaningful work.
And the stakes get even higher when the Guardian looks at the broader infrastructure and ethics. We have political promises about massive tech expansion crashing into physical reality, like the highly publicized delays in building new UK data centers.
Right.
And on a global scale, The Guardian reports on the shifting ethics of military technology, noting that AI is actively being used to automate target selection in modern warfare.
And if we connect those disparate examples, they all point to the same underlying danger. Making intelligence a utility is causing immediate real-world disruption.
Yeah.
When systems act autonomously, whether a bot is generating a generic essay, a corporate tool is misunderstanding a client's needs, or a military algorithm is selecting a target, the critical element of human judgment is being sidelined.
And if we are willing to outsource the heavy lifting of our cognitive labor just to avoid a struggle, it is only logical that we would start outsourcing the heavy lifting of our emotional labor, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Because relationships are incredibly messy. They require a lot of friction.
And this brings us to what might be the most insidious shift documented in the Nexus issue. We are moving rapidly from cognitive utility to emotional dependency.
This is where the research of Sue Anteo comes in, right?
Yes.
She's a fellow at the Harvard Kennedy School studying the legal and ethical implications of human-like anthropomorphic AI.
Teo has documented the rise of what she calls emergent vulnerabilities. As chatbots become more sophisticated, conversational, and relational, people are forming deep, genuine emotional dependencies on them.
That is wild.
And our current legal and social frameworks are entirely unequipped to manage a society where millions of people are emotionally bonded to software.
She describes this transition as the dawn of intimacy capitalism.
It is a chilling phrase, because it represents a fundamental evolution in the tech business model.
Wait, help me understand the actual mechanics of that. Traditional data collection tracks what I search for online so an algorithm can serve me an ad for running shoes. How does a company monetize a parasocial relationship with a chatbot? Are they charging by the hour for empathy?
They don't need to charge by the hour. They monetize the engagement and the psychological profiling.
Ah.
An AI companion is engineered to be perfectly compliant. It never disagrees with you. It never gets tired. It centers entirely on your needs.
So it's the perfect friend.
Right, which fosters intense user addiction. The longer you stay engaged in that parasocial bond, the more time you spend on their platform, generating an incredibly deep well of emotional data.
Wow.
They are no longer just tracking your consumer habits. They are monetizing your emotional reliance on a synthetic entity.
There is another article from Psychology Today in our source material that examines this specific dynamic through what the author calls a flourishing lens.
I love that concept.
Yeah, they ask a very simple question. Does this technology help human beings flourish, or does it diminish us?
And applying that flourishing lens to relational chatbots yields some pretty concerning results. A highly responsive AI absolutely offers temporary relief from loneliness. It feels good in the moment to be validated. But the article argues that relying on this synthetic validation ultimately atrophies our ability to maintain real-world connections.
Oh, yeah, because real human beings aren't perfectly compliant. Real relationships require compromise. They require empathy when someone else is having a bad day. They require that friction we were talking about earlier.
Exactly. If you condition your brain to only interact with an entity designed to perfectly cater to your emotional needs, you lose the psychological resilience required for actual human interaction. The friction of misunderstanding and repair is how we build deep trust.
Here's where it gets really interesting to me. You look at the news, and the dominant narrative is a panic about economic replacement. Will AI replace software engineers? Will it replace accountants?
Always about the jobs.
Right. But we are completely ignoring the very real risk that we are voluntarily handing over our relationships. We are outsourcing our fundamental human need for connection to a machine.
That is precisely why Sue Anteo at Harvard is calling for urgent, empirical, longitudinal studies. We cannot just guess at the long-term psychological effects of intimacy capitalism.
We need real data.
We need hard data to guide regulations. Society has to find a way to balance individual freedom, like the right of an isolated person to seek comfort from a chatbot, with the protection of our collective societal well-being.
Right.
If we don't study these emergent vulnerabilities now, we risk sleepwalking into an epidemic of tech-induced social isolation.
So let's pivot to how we actually navigate this, because we can't uninvent the technology. The network is built. The algorithms are trained.
The genie is out of the bottle.
Exactly. If AI risks making us cognitively lazy and socially isolated, how do we harness its undeniable power without losing our humanity?
We need a fundamentally new mental model for how we interact with it. Daishan Wang provides a brilliant framework for this in his Nature article. He argues that we have to stop treating AI as an autonomous replacement for human effort. Instead, we should view these systems as airplanes for the mind.
Airplanes for the mind. I really like that.
It perfectly captures both the incredible capability and the inherent danger of the technology. Think about the mechanics of commercial aviation. An airplane is enormously powerful. It allows us to travel at speeds and altitudes that are biologically impossible for a human being.
Right.
But that machine, despite all its automated systems, requires a highly skilled, expert human pilot.
Because full automation has a massive blind spot.
It does.
Yeah.
Wang emphasizes that scientific discovery, complex problem solving, and any truly innovative human endeavor relies heavily on human intuition. It relies on our ability to interpret the unexpected.
Which a machine can't really do.
Right. If a fully automated system encounters a bizarre, unprecedented anomaly in a data set, its programming will likely categorize it as a data error and delete it.
But a human scientist looks at that exact same anomaly, uses their intuition, and realizes they've just discovered penicillin.
Exactly. You need the human pilot to avoid catastrophic errors and to recognize genuine breakthroughs. Wang gives a very concrete example of how this model works. In practice, with a system called SciCGPT.
Okay, wait. How does SciCGPT prevent the issue we talked about earlier, where the AI is just an opaque black box making decisions we can't verify?
SciCGPT solves that by not being a single opaque brain. It is designed for complex research workflows, but it operates as a committee of specialized AI agents.
A committee?
Yeah. One agent acts as a data gatherer, another acts as a logic checker, and a third acts as a summarizer. Because these specialized agents have to communicate with each other to complete a task, they generate a transparent chat log.
Oh, that's brilliant. So the human researcher can actually read the transcript of how the AI arrived at its conclusion.
It leaves a complete audit trail. The human remains firmly in the loop. The transparency allows the researcher to audit the logic, spot the leaps in judgment, and step in to guide the process.
It's exactly like using autopilot on a commercial flight. Autopilot is fantastic for cruising altitude. It saves the pilot from cognitive fatigue. It handles the millions of micro adjustments required to keep the plane level.
Right.
But you absolutely want a human being's hands firmly on the yoke when you are landing in a severe thunderstorm. You need human judgment when the environment becomes unpredictable and the stakes are life or death.
Wayne's ultimate conclusion, and really the overarching takeaway for how we should approach this entire technological era, is that humans must retain final authority.
Always.
AI should be deployed specifically to enhance human decision-making, not to replace it. By insisting on transparent systems and keeping the human pilot in the loop, we ensure that our work and our society remain ethical, accountable, and grounded in human judgment.
Okay, let's take a breath and look at the ground we've covered on this deep dive. We started by tearing down the outdated sci-fi myth of the singularity. By looking at evolutionary biology and neuroimaging, we saw that true intelligence, whether in the small world architecture of our brains or the networks of future AI, is a highly connected collective property.
And from there, we explore the very real dangers of turning that intelligence into a cheap commodity. We saw how outsourcing our reasoning removes the mental friction necessary for personal agency.
Yeah.
And how the rise of intimacy capitalism monetizes our emotional vulnerabilities, threatening to atrophy our capacity for real, resilient human connection.
And finally, we found a practical path forward, treating AI as an aeroplane for the mind. Harnessing its incredible speed to process data, but demanding systemic transparency and relying on our uniquely human intuition to pilot the machine.
So to you, listening to this right now, the next time you open an AI tool, whether it's to draft an email, analyze a spreadsheet, or brainstorm a creative project, ask yourself a question. Are you acting as the pilot, using this tool to fly higher and see further? Or are you handing over the controls, avoiding the friction of the work, and becoming a passive passenger in your own mind?
So what does this all mean? It brings us right back to the paradox we started with. If human intelligence is this beautifully complex, highly connected property that is literally built and strengthened through struggle, through mental friction, and through the messiness of real human relationship, and we increasingly use AI to completely eliminate that friction and bypass those relationships, are we inadvertently training the AI's neural network to become more human while in training our own? Think about that. Keep your hands on the yoke. We'll catch you on the next deep dive.